XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is my privilege to be hanging out with Steve Bick in the Santa Anita Alan Malamud press box, Frank Miramati, and we're going to bring in a big-time friend of the show and friend of us personally, Jay Privman. And I told you before the break that Jay used to write for the green sheet, which you had to meticulously pull out of the daily news when I was a youngster, and I've known Jay for some time. My first work on television in the industry was in 1997 or 98, one of those 2 years. Jay was working right here at Santa Anita on the shows that were, I believe, on Fox or Sports Channel or one of those local affiliates. And I filled in for Jay, and Jay kind of took me through and trained me on what to do and how to say things and how to get the – really, how to ask questions was a good part of his advice. And I remember one of my first guests on that show when I was filling in for Jay was Jack Carava, who is a tremendous interview, and he was recently a guest on with Quigley as well. He's just a guy that he'll help you. If you need some stories, just send it to Jack. But much respect for Jay Pribben, who also participated on the Friday night shows here at Santa Anita years back, where they would talk about the big races coming up, and many, many winners given out by Mr. Pribben.
And on this show as well. Jay, good morning.
Hi, guys. How are you doing? Pizza for breakfast?
I actually brought pizza for Steve. I even brought my toaster. No joke. It's in it. So because I wanted him to be able to put the pizza in. I don't believe people's fingerprints should be on one's food. So I brought Ziploc's pizza from Vito's as well as Santino's. I was disappointed not to have some Valentino's in the fridge, but the winds were so ridiculous that the toaster and pizza remain in the vehicle right now. But I actually told Steve I was making him breakfast here for the show, and I'm here a lot longer than I expected. I thought I was here for like 10 minutes.
That's not the way we work. I know a good thing when I see it. Jay, we had a morning here that was surreal with these winds.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I was following along there with the sound like the trees got knocked down and they had to cancel training, so hopefully it'll just be a one-off and we'll be back at it tomorrow morning, but safety first.
Yeah, this was an odd. I was so looking forward to, you know, being down at Clocker's Corner with the line restored, and we'll save it for tomorrow. We'll have Baffert, Sheriffs, and Mandela, ideally. And Jay, just a great start to February. It really felt like after last week, as you and I discussed the other day, you know, the 2019 in the rearview mirror, and the attention really turns to the Classic Trail, and we had a very good representation in Florida, New York, and California Saturday.
Yeah, it was kind of sensory overload trying to follow not only those stakes, but there were so many other good stakes on the undercards of those days as well. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to see those three prep races. You had the Withers in New York, the Holy Bull in Florida, and then the Robert Lewis out here at Santa Anita. And I did my horse-by-horse analysis of all three of those races, and they're all up at drf.com, so you can see what I thought of the performances of all the horses and who I think's moving forward and who I think might need to take a powder on the Derby Trail.
Well, it seems the consensus, at least in terms of figures, the 100 buyer from Tis the Law, and the way in which he basically put the Kentucky difficulties behind him, it seems to be the place to start. That seems like the performance everybody is still talking about.
Well, certainly the most dynamic performance. Like you mentioned, he got a buyer figure of 100, which was his career best and right up there among the best that this crop has produced so far. The good thing about it is that he bounced back from that subpar race in the Kentucky Jockey Club. I thought the second horse at Tay Indiana also ran well. You know, the knocks, though, Steve, we've seen something with Tis the Law in his last three races now that I think is something that needs to be corrected by the time he gets to the Derby, potentially. And that is, he just doesn't appear to like being on the inside. He had an outside perfect stocking trip in the Champagne and looked terrific. He was wrangled back to get outside on Saturday and ran great. But when he was inside the other day, he didn't look like he liked it down there. And he certainly didn't appear to run his best. I think that's obvious in the Kentucky Jockey Club. Now, was it because he was inside in the Kentucky Jockey Club? Was it because it was under the lights, Churchill Downs, and off track? I mean, there's other potential factors, and maybe he just threw in a clunker that day. But he was ridden the other day with the obvious intent to stay outside. And I thought it was actually weird that after going into the first turn in about the three path, that Franco allowed the horse to go down to the rail, and he was in danger of getting trapped again as they turned into the backstretch, and he was just lucky that other than Etay and Dien, it was a pretty empty field, and he was able to wrangle back and get outside, and he looked terrific after that. But that would be my only quibble with him right now, because everything else he does, he's obviously very talented, and his Champagne was terrific, and this was terrific. But, boy, if he were to draw inside in the Derby, that would concern me, just off what I've seen in his three races. So hopefully there's time for him to learn to not be intimidated down there, or for his connections to feel comfortable that he's not intimidated down there. But that's the one thing about him that I'd be concerned about. But there's a lot more to like than to you know, pick at here, because he's very talented.
One thing that I, for those that, you know, say to themselves, oh, well, is Barkley tag, can he make the, yes. And all you have to do is go back to Funnyside, where Barkley ended up changing the bit and giving him a much more comfortable bit, a leather or rubber bit that was easier on his mouth. They discovered ultimately that he had a tender mouth, and they needed to make that adjustment. And yes, Barkley Tag, fully capable of doing what's necessary.
Barkley Tag has forgotten more than most people in racing.
Yes.
Please.
I know.
Yeah. Not a concern.
Exactly.
And Jim Healy making his presence felt on the at the races. Fantastic. The old Jim Healy show was something special. I was going to ask you about what you thought of Kingman's performance this weekend.
What did I think of Kingman's performance? What did I? The guy hit 7 home runs against us. The
8.
With 8, there you go. Toledo kind of was getting some notice. You know, obviously they're gonna have to regroup, I guess, with him. And Jay, while we're on that topic, and before we talk about the other two preps, some thoughts about what went on in the Swale. Earlier on the card, with Greenlight Go coming back and Mischievous Alex actually performing quite nicely.
He ran a dynamic race. I saw the follow-up stuff that my colleagues, Marty McGee and Mike Welsh, produced yesterday coming out of the two races. And specifically in regards to Mischievous Alex, it sounds like John Service is, you know, of the opinion that they know what he is, which is a really, really good sprinter, and they're not inclined to try and go down the Derby trail and turn him into a mile and a quarter kind of horse. I thought the other two horses that were, you know, well-regarded going into the race had slightly compromised trips, but they certainly can improve off of that, but nobody was beating the winner that day. He was just too fast for them going 7/8, and now the other ones will get a chance. When they stretch out, hopefully we'll see them next in the Fountain of Youth in 4 weeks.
Exactly. Greenlight Go, Untitled as well. Untitled, the acquisition for Cassie and Barber, didn't get off to a good start. That immediately compromised him. And Greenlight Go kind of got untracked late. And Jimmy using it strictly as a launch pad for the three-year-old season. Let's go up to New York before we talk California. And I know, Jay, you pulled out the adjective, you know, staggerfest a little bit down the stretch. From what I understand, the track was plenty deep, but still, Fig came back a little soft. Some thoughts about what we saw in the Withers.
Right, so this is where figures really, I think, help you, because even though the track was obviously deep and tiring, when you do the variant for the day, that accounts for that when a final fig is produced. And the Withers got an 86, which is a significant cut below what's going to be needed moving on. You know, Max Player, the points in his favor that he runs as though it doesn't matter how far a race is, he's going to be just fine. Going out to mile, obviously we're going a mile and an eighth, so going out to a mile and a quarter, mile and a half, I mean, that's not going to get in his way. The concern is that just his figs are not anything to get excited about yet. You know, an 86 for him, and obviously the others getting even lesser figures. This race for me was the weakest of the three on Saturday. The other thing about Max Player is that he was ridden as though he resented the kickback. You could see going into the first turn he was not comfortable, and Dylan Davis got him to the outside, and they were just willing to give up the ground loss just to keep him away from the kickback. And that's something you can get away with when you're running in a race where you only need an 86 to win. Pardon me. It's not something that you're going to be able to get away with when you need to be faster. So, you know, but look, it was only his third start. He's got a right to get better. But this group on the whole, to me, is a cut below what, you know, the division's leaders.
Is there any allowance to be made for these sophomores, you know, running nine furlongs at this time of year? And that, you know, with added maturity and you know, added... you know, added opportunity, you know, they might go forward. I mean, this sort of falls into that Remsen category, you know, where we, you know, we wonder about, you know, horses at that stage of their careers going nine panels.
Right. And, you know, for instance, Shotsky, who won the Remsen, was second in this race the other day. So he's had that experience going that far. But, you know, for instance, he got an 82 on Saturday. And the thing I like about his race is that he got tackled by several different horses along the way, and he fought them all off with the exception of the winner. But I was kind of underwhelmed by his Remsen, and I just think you need to be taking a step forward at this point. To your point, yeah, there's certainly the possibility that running at these distances now is going to leg them up better for what they're going to be asked to do in the coming 3 months. But I'd rather take a faster horse at a mile and a 16th right now than a horse who's significantly slower at a mile and an eighth at this point. They're just not, you know, I think, you know, for instance, if Tiz the Law ran a mile and an eighth the other day, I think you'd have seen an equally dynamic performance. And you just didn't really, by, you know, the eye test on the Withers was, you're lacking for me.
Well, and that gets us to the in-between race, you know, between the, you know, the impressive visual of Tiz the Law backed up by a strong Fig. And here at Santa Anita, we watched the, you know, still undefeated Thousand Words do what he seems to do, which is, you know, run at a steady clip and, you know, assuming that as the distances stretch out, he'll be able to continue to plug along. He's a different kind of Baffert three-year-old.
Yeah, he's just much more of a grinder. He's not a brilliant kind of horse. But, you know, he's obviously proven in this race and then in his previous start in the Los Alamitos Futurity that he's really tough to get past. And one of the things I noticed about the race the other day, and that I also noticed when he ran in the Los Alamitos Futurity, is that even if there's a horse that looks like they're making a run at him, not only in the race, but even maybe as you get to the wire, you're thinking, oh, well, you know, that horse might gallop out better. But if you watch the gallop out, he stays in front. He's an extremely competitive horse. He does not want to let another horse get past him. And even on the gallop out the other day, nobody went by him. So that's kind of his style. He's a grinder. He's a fighter. His SIGs are in the low 90s. That's what he's done. He got a 91 in the previous race and a 92 in this one. So he needs to get better, but he's obviously the kind of horse that if you get in a dogfight with, it's going to take something to go by him. Of the others in the race, I thought Royal Act ran a good race, considering it was his first try on dirt after a couple of races on grass. He gave up some ground the whole way going wide, but he kept plugging away, and I thought it was an encouraging effort and one you'd see to in order to move on. The one horse I want to talk about a little more is High Velocity, who finished third. I know a lot of times after a race is over, the winner gets lauded, and you know, people are like, oh, my God, what a great ride that was. And in a lot of cases, it was just merely you were on the best horse. The ride on High Velocity was fantastic. And if you get a chance, I want people to go back and watch the way Joel Rosario rode this horse going into the first turn. He is sitting as quietly as you could possibly sit on a horse. This horse has so much natural speed that he hit the top. And you could tell Rosario was just trying to nurse him along, make sure he didn't go too fast, too soon. He was so dead still on that horse. And as a result, I thought he set moderate fractions. He wasn't going too fast. I thought he gave him every possible chance to succeed going a mile and a 16th, and he just wasn't good enough. Shipping out of town might be in his benefit. You know, perhaps going to Oaklawn will be in the cards for him next time. But looking at him down the line, my thought is if he couldn't beat that field with the way the race unfolded Saturday, I just don't see him being better against at longer distances in a hotter paced race. But I really call people's attention. It's subtle, but I just thought it was the way Rosario rode that horse was so good, and it just didn't matter. I mean, the horse just wasn't good enough. But my God, he's just sat so still and gave him every possible chance to win that race.
Baffert said afterward that the effort, the spot J that popped in his head for High Velocity for when the 9 furlong try comes, he said was Sunland. He said, "I think that horse could win at Sunland."
Right. Well, that's illuminating, right?
Yes, I mean, but of course, you know, it's still good for the resume, and it's a $600,000, right? Usually $600,000.
It might be eliminating too.
It's $800,000.
$800,000. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I thought for 1,000 words for him to sit, and you know, part of the reason he sits so comfortably in that pocket is because that's as fast as he's going to go. But at the same time, he, as opposed Jay to Tis the Law, there, you know, there he sat eating dirt with horses abreast of him and, you know, two up in front of him, and he was very, very comfortable in Flavian Pratt's hands.
Very much so, and he split horses at the top of the lane to go after the leaders and eventually win the race. I mean, that's the mark of a horse who, as we saw just in the way he finished the race off this time and last time and the way he galloped out, he's just a fighter. He's not going to back down from a challenge. He's not going to be intimidated being inside or having to go between horses, and those are things that are in his favor. But he just needs to be, as we progress over the next few months, he probably needs to be a little bit faster in terms of his performances, but in terms of his competitive nature, he's right there.
Can we have you touch for a moment on Bob Lewis himself and maybe your experiences in covering him and Team Baffert and such together? And of course, he had horses with Lucas and others too, but what were your recollections of Mr. Lewis?
I just one of the all-time great people I've dealt with, Frank, in the sport. He and his, you know, his wife Beverly both had a great passion for racing, won a couple of Kentucky Derbies, obviously Silver Charm with Baffert, but also Charismatic with Lucas. You know, both horses won the Derby in Preakness and then failed to win the Belmont Stakes. in the case of Charismatic, dramatically so. But they had so many other terrific horses over the years. You know, Serena Song, for instance, and I mean, they were just and Lewis, not only with the stuff that he did for racing, but he did a lot of stuff for Jeff Lucas specifically when he was seriously injured. Lewis was on the board of one of the local hospitals here, and it was a rehab center that Jeff needed to go to, and there was just a lot done behind the scenes in that regard, which I remember from back in those days. So not only all the top horses he had, but he did a lot of stuff for people in racing behind the scenes too, and classy and always wanted the best for the sport, and I just thought very, very highly of him.
Nice.
I don't know where I was at the time, but somebody called Baffert. They said Robert, and his head picked up, and he said, "The only person that calls me Robert is Bob Lewis."
Yep, they used to call him Robert.
Does this keep Jay? Does this keep 1,000 words on the McKinsey track?
He's had the same kind of story arc as McKinsey. We'll just have to see if hopefully in his case he can make it all the way to the Kentucky Derby and not have a knockdown dragout battle in a prep that ends up costing both of them their best chances at the Kentucky Derby. McKinsey and Boltoro, they both were their middle part of the 3-year-old years were compromised by the battle that they had in prior to even getting to the Santa Anita Derby.
Well, it's funny. Frank invoked Calf Wayne and Badge of Silver earlier today off the air, and when you mentioned that, Jay, it also makes me, with the Fountain of Youth not far off now, it makes me think of the Read the Footnotes, 2nd of June.
Yeah, that was one of them. Read the Footnotes, it still got onto the Derby that year for Rick Violette, but both those horses were never really the same. They were just absolutely crushed from that race. I was at that race. I remember that. They just absolutely went at it, and just it was just too much too soon for both of them. It just knocked them out.
Agreed.
And Bobby Frankel ruined that Calf Wayne Badge of Silver showdown with Peace Rules that year. So much for that showdown, Werner versus Baffert. In fact, the Daily Racing Form had the story, and Jay wrote it about that. Ronnie Werner and Bob Baffert hooking up, and it was a nice little rivalry going on in the press box. The team Werner, Chad Schechsnyder and all them. When I got up the morning to drive to work on the day, I had Calf Wayne shaving creamed on my car. That was that was fun. And came up to the press box and had a couple of words with Chad. Took a look at his eye, and I realized that's about all I should do and maybe want to back off right about that. The line makers were lining up, and it wasn't a matter of what the line was. It was going to be a matter of what the time of the bout was going to be. So
it was Conor McGregor situation?
It was not going to last long, believe me. So I took a look at him, and I said, this doesn't look like a good rivalry. I think I'll accept where I stand in this matchup.
Too funny. Jay, we're probably not going to talk on Friday. It's a light week anyway, but an important horse coming up to another race, and that's the Sam Davis at Tampa Independence Hall, and all systems seem go for Team Trombetta.
Right, Marty McGee is that horse worked over the weekend, so he's all set. Marty McGee is headed up there for us, so there'll be on-site coverage from him at the Sam Davis, and they've got a really good undercard that day as well. I think Got Stormy's running in the making her first start of the year in the grass race for older fillies and mares on the undercard.
Nice.
But there's a non-point scoring race that is very significant this coming weekend, Steve, and that's the San Vicente.
Yes.
On Sunday at Santa Anita, because Storm McCourt, who is going to be making his first start since winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and earning the Divisional Eclipse Award vis-a-vis that victory. He's going to make his first start as a three-year-old in the San Vicente. It's funny, speaking of Bob Lewis, that was the San Vicente was the first start as a three-year-old for Silver Charm. That's kind of an old-school way to do things, to come back in a seven-ace race and then stretch out to two turns. That's the way, you know, Woody Stevens used to do it and Charlie Whittingham used to do it. And like I said, Baffert did it with Silver Charm, and Pete Irton's going to do it with Storm the Court, and he'll come back there and then move on from that. So a couple of races this weekend certainly worth keeping an eye on.
Well, and Jay, beyond the road to the Derby conversation with Frank here, and given how much press box chatter conversation we've been having this morning, I my ears perked up when I heard about the green sheet, and I figured that had to be early days for you on the stomp.
But yeah, that was my first job, was at the Daily News in Los Angeles. That was my first job out of college. And back then, all the local newspapers sold an on-track racing edition. The LA Times did, the Pasadena Star News did. Back then, the Herald Examiner was in existence, and they had a terrific racing section. And the paper I was at wanted to do that as well. And so they had a little four-page wrap on the outside of the paper at the track, but they'd also put it inside the paper. And as Frank was saying, if you were a home subscriber, you really had to kind of go hunting for it. But it was in there as part of the sports section. And it was a four-page wrap with articles and a consensus box and charts from the previous day's races. So that was the old... they called it the Racing Green. It was part of the Daily News' sports section back then.
By the way, speaking of first jobs, my first job, delivering the Herald Examiner. We lived in Westwood between my fifth and sixth grade years, and I delivered the Herald Examiner. I was making $50 a month, and I do remember getting a bonus for outstanding accuracy, and I got a $5 bonus when the guy came to my house to pay me. He gave me an extra $5, and I always remember this guy at 10535 Wilshire Boulevard that would leave. He was at the end of the hallway, and at Christmas he would either leave me $1 or $2 in an envelope because he asked me to please slide the paper under his door. And there was always like a $1 or $2, very crisp $1 or $2. Those were the days. And no surprise that my breakfast of choice back then at the Del Capri Hotel on the corner of West Holm and Wilshire near where my route was, Oreos and grape soda. It wouldn't shock anybody who knows me now.
Too funny. Jay, you and I, but Jay, notably, Jay and I are the exact same age. You're
51.
Oh, so you're younger than us by a margin. I thought you were older, actually.
I don't blame you.
No, I thought you were like 56, 57. Not significantly. Jay, who was in this press box of renown from an earlier generation that were legends that, you know, that it was exciting for you to sit close by?
Well, I mean, back then and still to this day, the undisputed king of handicapping and knowledge and the oracle is Jeff Siegel. I mean, he was the boss then.
I'll applaud that.
And he's still unbelievably good. He's just an incredibly gifted handicapper. But, I mean, like I was saying earlier, all the different newspapers had reporters, and a lot of them had a racing reporter and a handicapper as well. So, for instance, the Herald Examiner had Gordon Jones, Jerry Annabucci. The L.A. Times had, Byron Abbott and Bob Hebert were still around then. He was getting long in the tooth, but there was a gentleman named Ernie Mason who was a handicapper for the Pasadena Star News, and his wife's name was Louise, and her
Lucky
pick
Louise.
Appeared as Lucky Louise. So those are some of the people from back, you know, when I first started out. This is in the early 80s after I got out of college, and it was a pretty dynamic situation back then because there were just so many people in the press box. I mean, Bobby Frankel would hang out in the press box all the time then. He would sit in the second row at Santa Anita and just opine on the different horses and riders, and it was very educational to listen to his insights. And he liked hanging out up there.
I can tell you that in the 80s, at the clubhouse entrance, by far the most vocal in promoting their paper was the gentleman selling the Pasadena Star News. I could picture him right now. I could easily, you could put a lineup of 50 people, and I'll tell you who that guy was who used to say, Pasadena Star. That guy was loud and effective in his sales. He would get your attention on the way in here.
And I've been getting the Star News free, you know, in the hotel every morning, and I got the Sunday. You know, sometimes they won't give you a Sunday edition, but they did the Sunday yesterday. And the Star News is running Agate. They're running entries and charts, and they've got a guy, you know, covering and wrote the whole Saturday card up. So I know people are of a mind, Jay, the newspapers aren't covering anymore, but
authoritative.
The Star News has always done a good job covering racing. They're now owned by, there's a newspaper group that owns a lot of the papers in Southern California, and Art Wilson is the lead writer for them, but they also pick up columnists who might be based with a different paper, but they all sort of share the content. And it was nice to see, you know, someone like Mark Wicker, for instance, at the track on Saturday. He likes all different kinds of sports, and you get a guy like that out there who's one of the absolute best columnists in the country, and having him weigh in, and you know, he got it in terms of the story of the day that day for a general sports columnist, which was Lee Searing winning with Midcourt and the whole connection to Kobe. Yes. Bryant and Kobe's back, and Lee Searing silks are the same colors as the Lakers, and that was just a perfect kind of story for a columnist like that to do. And it's nice to have a guy who is interested enough in racing to come out and do it when it's not his beat.
Jay, how much occasion did you have? I don't know if I've ever asked you this, to deal with Jim Murray or share some of your other sports coverage.
Well, he loved racing, quite a bit, and you know, unfortunately, I didn't know him as well as I wish I had. I was in his company several times, obviously, over the years, but I was actually more intimidated by him, and I shouldn't have been, because he was a very nice guy, but he was just sort of, you know, godlike. I think you could make the argument he was the greatest sports columnist ever. And I just felt almost intimidated by him because of his talent, not because of his persona. I mean, he was certainly a, you know, gracious person that way. But his wife at the time, later before his passing, and later when I knew him, was, you know, Linda McCoy Murray, who actually is now, in fact, married to the trainer David Hoffman. And she has kept Jim Murray's legacy going with a charity that I always support. It offers scholarships for students at several sports journalism scholarships for students at several colleges around the country, including Jim Murray's alma mater, St. Bonaventure. And so it was actually more through her that I felt like I got to know him later in his career. And unfortunately, you might remember the last story he ever wrote was on the Pacific Classic that was in 1998 at Del Mar, the Freehouse one. That was the last piece he ever wrote. He passed away the next day.
I was aware of that. I didn't realize it was the last thing he ever wrote. That's amazing. And certainly fair to put Jim Murray, in the Red Smith, Granny Rice, you know, argument as you know, greatest sports columnist ever.
You just wonder where people like him, where does he come up with these words? Just and telling the ability to tell the story. He was unreal.
One of the things I loved when I got to college was going to the library at Colgate, and you know, they have all the periodicals, they have all the newspapers from around the country. And so, growing up in Hartford area, the Hartford Current, and we had good rider, Claire B., and there are some good, very good riders. In fact, Murray was from Hartford, grew up in Hartford.
Yeah.
He was Hartford native. But Jim Murray was one of those columnists as a kid, you know, that I loved to read. And I could only imagine, Jay, what it was like, to work nearby and I understand.
Well, you
got to
remember,
mean.
I grew up in Southern California, so I mean, I had read him for years,
right?
Getting the LA Times at home and reading his column for from the time I was a kid. I mean, so then to be there, like I said, it was almost intimidating because having read him for so long, you're like, well. I can't compete with this.
The LA Times now has a gentleman named Arash Markazi who just took over, and he won the Jim Murray and the Alan Malamud things at USC as a kid, growing up. And then all of a sudden now he's in this position, like it's hard for him to wake up and look and say, like, wait a minute, I'm actually writing. I used to read here, and now I actually have – and he knows that with it comes a great amount of responsibility.
And you mentioned Alan Malamud, who, the press box there at Santa Anita is named after, and he obviously was around a lot in the day of the Herald Examiner columnist, and he was another general sports columnist from back then who loved racing, and he was at the track all the time. He loved it.
He was very kind to me. In 1994, he wrote me up in the notes on a scorecard for my Hollywood Park closing day race calls. By the way, I was just corrected by my girlfriend. I'm not 51, I'm 52, which was nice. That's fantastic.
Well, this was fantastic. I can't thank Frank Miramati nearly enough for spending the full 3 hours with us today. I know everybody enjoyed it because I've already heard from people. Jay, thanks for closing out the morning with us as well.
This was great, guys. I really enjoyed it. It was good catching up with you the other night, Stephen, having dinner.
Jay Pridman, everybody. DRF Pridman. And we'll catch up with Jay probably now next week because we've got NHC stuff. And so we'll save it for the following week. And Frank will save the final closing. I want to thank Johnny as well, but give everybody a couple of pizza joints that when they come to L.A.
When you come to L.A., here's what you have to do. You have to have Vito's. There are three locations. There's one in downtown, one on La Cienega, one in Santa Monica. It's an excellent New Jersey slice.
Nice.
If you like a real tiny, thin pizza, you get the Neapolitan at Santino's on Woodman, two doors north of Ventura Boulevard, but make sure you get the Neapolitan. My personal favorite pizza is in Manhattan Beach, Valentino's, the Sicilian pizza there, and I've been on the East Coast now for years. The best square pizza I've ever had, Valentino's, and it's my official favorite pizza.
There you go. You can't get a better push than that from Frank Miramati. Frank, thank you.
This worked out. I just wanted to come by and have a few words with you, and it turned out to be quite a fun experience, and I'm honored that you kept me on board.
We will be with you tomorrow. The archive and everything will be up a little bit later. Case has got a couple of appointments after the show. We'll be back here tomorrow, and hopefully there won't be, Santa Ana and any other kind of winds.
You had to see it to believe it. if you weren't driving around at that time, you wouldn't believe it happened.
Talk tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly